Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Matters, the show in which I discuss all matters of the mind and in which I show how much mind matters. Welcome to part 15 of Control Your Brain, Control Your Life. I am Udo Staatsbuchler and I am live on air, and I welcome your calls with questions and comments as long as they relate to the subject I am talking about. All other questions, comments, and also suggestions, I will answer by email. Just go to my website http://www.mindmattersonline.info. Mind Matters Online is one word. Find my email address and write to me. I will reply within 48 hours. On page 4 of my website, you will find recordings of all my previous radio programs for you to listen to at your leisure. And I ask you again to go to the blogtalkradio.com website and click on the button at the top of the page that says Connect using Facebook and follow the prompts. Your Facebook friends can then share the show with us. Last week I spoke about feelings, emotions, and about guilt. Today I continue along these lines and address the two other most debilitating feelings that we can harbor: anger and fear. Anger, fear, and guilt are the trio of the most negative feelings that we can have. Well, let me rephrase this. Negative in the sense that they are not as positivity and optimism inducing like feelings of joy and pleasure. They are also not as constructive as motivation and determination, but they do serve a positive purpose too, and I will come to that as I go along. Let us talk about anger first. Anger is an emotional response to a grievance, whether it's real or imagined, past, present, or future, based on the perception of the aggrieved person. Anger is often based on the perception of a threat, and is often an emotional component in the flight or fight response, which we very often associate with stress. Anger can be provoked or triggered by perceived threats, such as conflict, or by abstract concepts, such as injustice, betrayal, and humiliation. Anger is both an active as well as a passive emotion. When active, a person can lash out verbally or physically at a target, whether it's justified or not. When passive, anger is demonstrated in active-passive behavior, which is hostility, in sulking, tension, or in silence. Physiologically, anger increases production of epinephrine and cortisol, thereby producing heightened stress levels. Hormonal changes can also increase the potential for anger, like sexual frustration, pain, hunger, fatigue, recovery from illness, PMS, birth, menopause, physical withdrawal, and also bipolar disorder. Some research suggests that there may be genetic predisposition to higher levels of anger, but I'm not sure if this is not generational behavior passed on to the new generation by the primary caregiver's anger-creating responses to events. A practical explanation of anger is the behavior that manifests and the physiological state or the sequence of physiological events that occur when, firstly, an individual attributes to another person or organization or object a source of pain or of deprivation, whether it is real and present or anticipated. The pain or deprivation does not have to be a physical threat. It can be also an emotional pain or abstract, for example, being lied to. Secondly, when an individual chooses behavior, cognitive or physical behavior, to stop or oppose pain or deprivation. The key here is the choice to oppose the source of pain. Without opposition, we would be left with fear behavior, such as running away in the face of pain. Anger is usually magnified and extended in time when a cognitive decision is made about the intent of the individual who caused the pain. If the individual decides that the pain or deprivation was intentional and deliberate, the feeling is usually much more intense. Anger is often associated with fear and with helplessness. Anger and rage is in direct proportion to the fear the individual is experiencing. In my mind, anger is also a habit, because it can be a habitual way how the individual responds and behaves to circumstances of which he or she does not approve. It is not how I am, it is how I react. Anger is a feeling we experience when events in our world are not going according to our plans. Many of us have a long list of shoulds. These are our beliefs and expectations, how we should behave or how other people should behave. Like, for example, my spouse should arrive home from work on time, or the shop assistant should treat me with more respect, or I should be better at that. Each time one of these expectations is not met, we get angry. But it is not the mismatch between our expectation and the actual event that causes anger. We set ourselves up to become angry by having such a list in the first place. It is as if we had an idea how things, people, events should be, and when they do not march according to our tune, we feel frustrated and get angry, or we try to change them. This usually works fine up to a point until we are 3 or 4 years of age. After this, it becomes a bit redundant. But this doesn't stop many of us remaining a victim of our tempers all of our lives. In essence, anger is a feeling that we get when we want to control the world around us. It is a pretty childish feeling, really, since no one person can or will ever be able to control everyone else in the world, or even in one's own family. We also love collecting anger points. For example, you get ready for work in the morning and you cannot find your car keys. This is after you realize that you are out of coffee and now you could not have your breakfast coffee, your early morning fix of caffeine. Then, driving to work, somebody cuts in front of you. At this point, you say to yourself, "This is going to be one of those days." Know that feeling? From this moment on, you are about to collect anger points. From now on, you will be looking for things to get annoyed about. And you will be very successful finding them, because you become so involved in it that you ignore all the things you could feel good about. We find what we set ourselves up to find. If I have a belief that the world is out to get me, or that nobody respects me, or that my family hate me, then I will find plenty of evidence to support my belief. And I will ignore any evidence that contradicts my belief. Remember what I told you about the thinker and the prover in one of my previous programs? Many of us set for ourselves standards so high that even a saint would have difficulties reaching them. And each time our performance fails to reach this unrealistically high standards, we mentally criticize ourselves, usually with harsh, aggressive self-talk. What is often occurring here is that we live our lives according to the rules that other people have imposed on us. Over the years, but in particular during our childhood, we acquire lots of standards or rules to live by from our parents, older siblings, teachers, other mentors, and also the media. Once we have acquired these rules, we accept them as the right way of doing things. We do not object them to ongoing evaluation. That's why many mature adults often try to live a fulfilled life with the beliefs and with the standards of a six-year-old. Get it right every time. If a thing is worth doing, it's worth doing it right. Well, if you wanted to live up to these, yours, expectations, you will often be very disappointed in yourself and get angry with yourself because of what you perceive as your failures. The consequences of anger are that anger impedes our ability to be happy. Anger and happiness are incompatible. Anger reduces our social skills and compromises our relationships. Anger leads to stress, and stress increases anger. We make mistakes when we are angry because anger makes it harder to process information. Anger can result in extremely negative actions like antisocial behavior, vandalism, violence, crime, spouse or child abuse. The physical signs of anger are any combination of the following: heightened blood pressure, increased stress hormones, shortness of breath, heart palpitation, trembling, heightened senses or dulled senses, yelling, stiffness of posture, contracted pupils, increased physical strength, tense muscles, speech and motion are faster and more intense, animated and exaggerated body movement, and oftentimes also impotence. Emotional signs of anger are criticism, irritation, hatred, silence, passive or aggressive behavior, envy, resentment or bitterness, jealousy, insecurity, low self-esteem, self-loathing, depression, anxiety, apathy, sleeplessness. Most of us feel angry at some time or other, and if we know how to do it, we can deal with it quite effectively. If you don't know it, get in touch with a competent therapist or send me an email and I will advise you. It gets more problematic if you feel angry much of the time or even most of the time, or if anger is your constant companion and you're always on the lookout to find something to be angry about. There's also the anger that can turn into rage, that can make you lash out against whoever is a perceived or real source of your rage. In all of these cases, you really should consult with a competent therapist. However, stay away from so-called anger management courses unless you have researched them thoroughly and they follow the following guidelines. I was always against the use of the word management in anger management or stress management, because trying to manage is difficult and mostly doomed to failure. Typically, anger management involves you in yet another battle, an internal one, where you are embattled with yourself and where one side of you is feeling angry and furious and the other side is trying to stop those feelings. Anger management implies also that you have to be angry first and then try stopping that feeling. I think it is much better to learn to avoid anger by changing your responses to the triggers that cause anger. Now, how do we do that? Firstly, with behavior modification. Find the source of your frustration and reduce or eliminate your exposure to these negative stimuli. reduce violent stimuli in your life, such as violent friends, and most importantly, certain drugs and alcohol. Reveal yourself and understand others. Let them know if and when you have a bad day. Indicate to others that you understand if they have a bad day and offer to listen to their grievances. Stop hostile fantasies. Do not dwell on issues that caused your anger. Think cool. Do not escalate anger or violence. Aggressive action on your part will cause an equally aggressive response, which starts a vicious circle, of course. Do not use anger to get your way. This may be successful in the short term, but it is a losing strategy in the long run. Learn and rehearse how to be calm in angering situations. Practice to smile. Believe you me, your face is not going to break. Second is a cognitive aspect of it. Accept that most things in the world are out of your control. Accept that it is your choice to become angry about those things. No one makes you angry. Accept that life can be unfair. Waste no energy to bemoan and don't attempt to change that fact. No one likes to be around an angry person and no one wants to help an angry person. So, why be angry? Maybe you do not want to have your problem solved. Maybe you just want to complain and be angry. Take stock of yourself. Find out where you are at this point in your life and determine which direction you want to go. What do you want? Do you want to be right or do you want to be happy? Let us now talk about fear. Fear is a basic feeling and a response to an aversion to threat or risk, real or perceived, past, present or future. It can also be extreme dislike to certain conditions, people or situations, such as darkness, graveyards and so on. Fear ranges from caution, mild caution, to phobia or paranoia. And it can also play a role in larger social networks, wherein personal fears are synergistically compounded to mass hysteria. Some fears are innate. 5-month-old children can show facial expressions of fear, and others are acquired, or we have been conditioned to experience fear under certain circumstances. Some motivational speakers argue that fear is a useless feeling and that we should do away with it as soon as it arises. I find it an extremely useful one because it gives us a choice to avoid or to confront dangerous situations. It is material to our fight or flight response in stressful situations. Therefore, fear is always found in stressful situations. Fear is an immensely complex, multifaceted, and enormously interesting feeling. Governments have realized it, and they are using fear as political weapons. Think about the non-existing weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, the non-existing link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam's government. Both fears were used to justify the invasion of Iraq. The act of fear has become a threat itself. In a bizarre way, fear has become a problem that exists in its own right, dissociated from any specific object. The fear of crime is conceptualized as a serious problem that is to some extent distinct from the actual problem of crime. In Britain, the Independent Expert Commission on Mobile Phones in 1999 concluded that public anxiety itself can lead to ill health. In the same way, anxiety about health risks is now considered to be a material consideration in determining planning applications. Fear is treated as an independent variable by public bodies. In the US, there is a discernible trend on the part of the courts to compensate fear, even in the absence of a perceptible physical threat. For example, it has been argued that people should be compensated who feel anxious about their health because an incinerator is to be sited near their homes. There can be also irony in fear. This is from an article in the Washington Post from August 2005. There is a Kremlin. Oh, God. I hope you can hear me. I really do. Well, I continue. Although the last case of smallpox was reported in the 1940s, there was a similar response to the one I mentioned before this interruption, to the rumor that in Russia, stockpiles of smallpox virus could have fallen in the hands of terrorists. What happens when fear strikes us? There is a physiological reaction. Fear is produced in the amygdala, a tense knot of neurons in the brain, and produces increased levels of norepinephrine, adrenocorticotropin, cortisol, and beta-endorphin. Liver releases glucose, which is sugar, to increase energy. The blood clotting ability speeds up. Immune system increases momentarily, gut shuts down, and no sex hormones are produced. Blood pressure goes up, adrenaline and cortisol goes up, heart rate goes up, digestive secretion and repair functions go down. Eyes widen out of anticipation what happens next. Pupils dilate to take in more light. Upper lip rises to show our teeth. Brows draw together, lips stretch horizontally, the eye blink rate is faster, the tone of voice tense, and then can be trembling, chattering teeth, crouching, crying, screaming, release of apocrine odors. Apocrine are modified sweat glands in the armpits and lower body. And sometimes people experience even a freeze reaction. An extreme form of fear is panic disorder. This is an anxiety disorder with similar physiological symptoms as fear, but much more intense. So much so that an attack of panic is often mistaken for a heart attack. It can mimic its symptoms of chest pain, shortness of breath, heart palpitations. Mass hysteria is a phenomenon that belongs to the panic group. It is a natural occurrence seen often in herds of animals when the result is a stampede. We humans are as vulnerable to mass hysteria as animals are. It is almost infectious in the sense that one person's panic may spread to other people nearby, and soon a whole group behaves irrationally and senselessly, such as fleeing in a random direction, or even attacking other people. Another extreme are phobias. A phobia is a strong, persistent fear of certain situations or activities. The main symptom is the excessive and unreasonable desire to avoid the feared subject or circumstance. A phobia is beyond the person's control and can interfere in his or her daily life. Research in the U.S. shows that almost 20% of the population suffers some form of phobia, and there is no reason to doubt that it is not as common elsewhere. We can have phobic reactions to everything, from ablutophobia, which is the fear of washing, to zoophobia, fear of animals. And it might begin with something that makes us just feel uncomfortable and build up from there. Some of the most common phobias are the fears of flying, of public speaking, of spiders or other insects, or animals in general, of open spaces, of closed-in spaces. The list is almost endless. We can have phobic reactions to just about everything, and it might begin with something that makes us just feel a little bit uncomfortable, and then it builds up. There are, however, excellent methods to cure phobias. The best known is probably cognitive behavioral therapy, in short CBT, which has become the method most psychotherapists use. Perhaps the most extreme form of phobia or fear is paranoia. Paranoia today is superseded by the term delusional disorder. It's an excessive fear or anxiety, perhaps even a psychosis. It is concerned about a person's own well-being, excessive to the point that the person's believed to be persecuted, under threat, or that there is a conspiracy against them. It is often associated with other mental disorders, in particular with schizophrenia, or it can be a side effect of medication or recreational drugs. Paranoia is often associated with low self-esteem, being suspicious of others, more doubt than belief, preoccupied with death and suffering. The sufferer is bitter, looks for hidden meanings in everything, feels misunderstood, defensive, prone to shame, often suffers depression. They are loners, they make enemies, and they often feel like outsiders. Cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, is a therapy of choice also for paranoia, to teach the person's coping mechanisms to deal with this condition. One of the most common fears is the fear of failure. What does failure actually mean? We all have different definitions of this word because we all have different benchmarks, points of reference, and values. One person's failure may be another one's fantastic learning experience. But most of us are afraid of failing at some time. For me, fear of failure means allowing fear to stop us from doing the things that we want to do to achieve what we want to achieve. Oftentimes, people have this fear since their childhood, created by unsupportive parents, over-demanding parents or teachers, and their oftentimes humiliating behavior towards the child. It is easy to see that this can, and probably will, cause fear of failure, which can be carried into adulthood and can even stay with them for life. Another frequent reason is that one spectacular failure in one's life, a messed-up presentation, for example, being laughed off stage, having been humiliated in front of an audience, all that can trigger, and more things, can trigger fear of failure for life. Or think of the ball player who drops the ball when it seemed to be impossible to drop it. The signs of fear are, of this particular fear, fear of failure, are reluctance to try new things, procrastination, excessive anxiety, failing to follow a task through to its conclusion, low self-esteem, low self-confidence, and the appearance of perfectionism, and therefore only doing things that you know by heart and know that you can easily finish them perfectly well. Unless you learn to accept failures in your life, whether it's your private or your working life, you remain in your zone of familiarity, mostly misnamed comfort zone, and drift along with your life, being a sheep following other sheep, feeling safe and secure in the knowledge that not much can happen to you. This, of course, is true. And not much will happen to you. Not much bad, and not much good either. In business and industry, people talk a lot about innovations and cutting-edge technology and blue skies thinking. But on an individual level, most people are not willing to try new things. What is holding them back? It's a fear of failure. In the corporate world, there's little tolerance for failure. Bonuses are paid for successes and not for failures, even though they could have produced a spectacular breakthrough. But even if there would be conditions that allow failure, most people will take setbacks personally, take them to heart, and let themselves be poisoned by disappointment rather than being encouraged to get up from the knockdown and have a go at it again. But also in the private sphere, slip-ups and blunders are necessary components in a relationship. They just do happen, whether you want them or not. Important is how you handle them. Everyone messes up occasionally. It is the ability to say, I'm sorry, and to fix your relationship. That is important. What can we do about this fear? As I have said many, many times, it depends on our perception and on our interpretation how to look at failure. You could choose to see your failure as the end of the world, as proof that you are not up to it and that you are totally inadequate to do a good job. Or you can reframe this experience as a wonderful learning experience. Every time you fail at something, you learn also something. And as you fail and learn, you grow and develop, and you will avoid repeating mistakes you had made. Failures only stop you if you let them stop you. Oftentimes, failures result in great and valuable insights from which you learn, and most certainly you learn what kind of person you are and how strong and persistent you are. It is important to realize that everything you do can end in failure. This is a challenge for you, and going for it regardless is not only courageous, but can be also highly rewarding. But before you respond to the challenge, analyze all potential outcomes. Train yourself to think more positively. Look at the worst case scenario, and if it is not a certain recipe for disaster, it is probably worth taking a risk. Have a plan B, and most importantly, use goal setting. Very similar to the fear of failure is the fear of success. And the biggest problem is that this fear is mostly unconscious. People who have this fear do not realize that they are holding themselves back from doing something great and important. If you experience the following thoughts or fears, you might have a fear of success on some level. You feel guilty about any success you have, no matter how small, because your friends, family, or co-workers have not had the same success. You do not tell others about your accomplishments. You avoid or procrastinate on big projects, especially projects that could lead to recognition. You frequently compromise your own goals or agenda to avoid conflict in a group or conflict within your family. You self-sabotage your work or your visions by convincing yourself that you are not good enough to achieve them. You feel subconsciously that you do not deserve to enjoy success in your life. You believe that if you do achieve success, you won't be able to sustain it. Eventually, you will fail and end up back in a worse place from where you started. So you think, why bother? There are several possible causes for the fear of success. You fear what success will bring. For example, loneliness, new enemies, being isolated from your family, longer working hours, or being asked for favors or money. You are afraid that the higher you climb in life, the further you are going to fall when you make a mistake. You fear the added work, responsibility, or criticism that you will face. You fear that your relationships will suffer if you become successful. Your friends and family will react with jealousy and cynicism, and you will lose the ones you love. You fear that accomplishing your goals and realizing that you have the power to be successful may actually cause an intense regret in you that you didn't act sooner. Overcoming fear of success. You can use several different strategies to overcome your fear of success. The good news is that the more you face your fears, bring them to the surface, and analyze them rationally, the more you are likely to weaken those fears and dramatically reduce your reluctance to achieve your goals. Take a realistic look at what will happen if you succeed with your goal. Do not look at what you hope will happen or what you fear will happen. Instead, look at what is likely to happen. It is important not to give a quick answer to this. Take at least 15 minutes to examine the issues and write down your answers to questions like the following ones. How will my friends and family react if I accomplish this goal? How will my life change? What's the worst that could happen if I achieve this goal? What's the best that could happen? What is it that makes me feel that I do not deserve to accomplish this goal? How motivated am I to work towards this goal? What am I currently doing to sabotage or hurt my own efforts? What can I do to stop those self-sabotaging behaviors? Another useful technique is to address your fears directly and then develop a backup plan that will overcome your concern. For instance, suppose you do not push yourself to achieve promotion, and the biggest reason is because you secretly fear that the additional income and recognition would jeopardize your family relationships and your integrity. You are worried that you would be so busy working to maintain your success that you never see your family, and you might be forced to make choices that would destroy your integrity. To overcome these fears, start by addressing your workload. You could set a rule for yourself that you will always be home by 7 p.m. You could tell this to your boss if you're offered the new position. For issues involving integrity, you always have a choice. If you set maintaining your integrity as your top goal, as your top priority, then you will always make the right choice. By creating backup plans that address your fears, you can often eliminate those fears entirely. Bear in mind that sometimes some people will react negatively to your success, particularly if they have been perceived as being more successful in the past. Never mind, and think about this. If people are this small-minded, and they cannot rejoice in their friend's success, do you really want to know them? The key points are that fear of success is very common, but many of us do not realize that we have it. Self-sabotaging activities such as procrastination, negative self-talk, and fearing what the success will bring may hold us back from achieving our goals and visions. If you think that you have a fear of success, identify what it is that makes you afraid of accomplishing your goals. The more you face your fears and analyze the reason for having that fear, the better able you will be to overcome the fear and move forward in your life. But going back to the more common feelings of fear, we need to realize that fear sometimes is a necessary feeling. It makes us decide whether to fight or to run away. It makes us avoid real-life threatening situations. But it's also a fact that many of us are controlled by fear. Their personal fear alerts are turned on all the time. They feel the stress and become more prone to irritability, disagreement, worry, insomnia, anxiety, and also depression. They are more likely to experience chest pain, high blood pressure, shortness of breath, dizziness, and headache. They become more prone to heart disease, cancer, and stroke. Worry about the wrong things put us at greater risk of the diseases that should be concerning us in the first place. Being controlled by fear is dangerous. Not only does it hold us back, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We therefore want to eliminate this particular dangerous aspect of fear. This also applies to anxieties and phobias, as well as to fear of failure and fear of success. To have knowledge of the three most debilitating feelings, anger, fear, and guilt, enables us to deal with them effectively, to do away with them. Imagine being able to do away with stress, with violent behavior, with phobias, anxieties, with your guilt and with your shame. Think about it. What will change for you if you are free of all that? Just imagine that. What will change for you if you are confident, hold yourself in high esteem, and respect yourself? Just imagine that. There are some tools that can help you changing these debilitating feelings that are, let's face it, utterly useless to you. The most important ones are those that build up your self-confidence, your motivation, your self-responsibility, your self-discipline, and your determination. This is a beginning. From there on, use reframing and other methods. Most of them I have talked about in previous shows, and others I will talk about in the near future. I have now come to the end of this program. Thank you for listening. I apologize for the interruption halfway through the show. I don't really know what it was. Go to my website, mindmattersonline.info, where you find my email address. MindMattersOnline is one word. Write to me and I will reply as usual within 48 hours. The same applies also to those of you who could not or cannot get through to this show or who do not want to call in for whatever kind of reason. Communicating directly with you is very important for me. I really want to know what you think about this program. I want to hear your questions, your comments, and I want to hear your suggestions. And if you have any personal problems you want to write to me about, I'm happy to give you my best possible advice. On page 4, or that's not correct anymore, it starts now on page 3 and goes on through a number of pages. So on starting on page 3 of my website, you find recordings of all my previous shows for you to listen to at your convenience. For now, I leave you with wise words by Nelson Mandela, and I quote, "I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he that fear." Unquote. Until next week, same day, same time, goodbye.